Hello and welcome to Storm Boy Speaks. On today's episode, we are concluding the greatest cover-up in modern history. So just to start off from where we were last time, which we discussed the incidents of Roswell and how that tied into connections to what I believe is arrangements, let's say, between extraterrestrial visitors, as it were, and the American government. Now, what we finished off with last time was realizing that Roswell was a very beginning incident, an incident that began pretty much the security, national security network, and the way that that was created began pretty much with Roswell. And it began pretty much with Roswell, as we noted, because the Americans were very afraid at that time. Suddenly they realized that there was something happening that was completely outside of their control. And at the time, President Truman, when it first occurred, was detailed by, as I said before, in the diary that was found of James Forrestal, was shown to be so shaken by the experience that in fact would do literally anything and organize anything, legitimize anything in order to try and protect the American populace and the idea of his presidency, undoubtedly. Now, of course, later on this was taken on by President Eisenhower, who was a general under Truman when during Roswell, and later on, of course, became president himself. We talked about how during that presidency he signed an agreement with the extraterrestrials, as we know, that probably it's Holloman Air Base or Edwards Air Base, to basically agree to a deal where the extraterrestrials were allowed to take and basically experiment upon American civilians and through abduction, and return the American military would receive technology from the extraterrestrials and be taught how to use it. So this is where the origin of the deep underground military bases came from, etc., etc. Now, during some of these early meetings between the extraterrestrials, as they started to teach the American military of these their own technologies, etc., there were certain presentations brought about. This was seen by a number of top military personnel, including a man who wrote a book called Behold the Pale Horse, who I've mentioned many times before, William Cooper, very famous, who was very high naval tech and basically cover operations in the military, and so he was privy to this information at the time. He obviously then reneged on these things later, left the military, and became a huge conspirator, you know, and one of the first real conspiracy theorists, for want of a better word. So from his study of these things, where he was shown many different, you know, photographs, he experienced many different things. He readily says himself, look, you know, I never saw an alien myself. However, I was privy to all these documents. So one of these documents that he was privy to, and that's of extreme importance here to our whole story, is the extraterrestrials, during one of their first, as I say, technical discussions with some of the very high-level military people, including the president at the time, including Eisenhower, was to show them a video, as it were, a literal visual kind of presentation, like a film or a video, where they showed what looked like a number of things from human history, including events from Jesus's ministry. Interesting, right? As Cooper points out later on, he said, look, of course, this could have been completely fabricated, and we don't know about this, but it's interesting that they would state some of these points. So one of the things they stated is, we have basically infiltrated your society throughout history. We've used you and controlled you through your governments, through occult practices, including witchcraft, you name it, but not just in a negative way. And again, this is the thing that people miss, but we have been the, as they were saying, the inspiration, as it were, behind magical practices. You know, in other words, hidden secret knowledge comes from us, is what they were saying. And this hidden secret knowledge all leads to a specific outcome, and this is of huge significance, to a specific outcome at a future time. And this is what they were trying to show. This is why this presentation was of great importance. Now, okay, before we get onto what that was, let's think about this. The number one important thing here is that this race, the grey aliens. Now, first of all, one of the information points I didn't discuss previously was during the autopsies on the alien bodies that were found in Roswell. So this is like prior to the meeting by a good 4-5 years, right? But the autopsies that were done on the grey alien beings were of a nature where they examined them and found that there was one species with them which looked like it had been a human fetus which had been adapted, changed, and genetically mutated in some way, but was clearly human. It had five fingers, you know, it had all human organs, but it had been basically somehow genetically developed to a few years old, but still in a fetus stage. This was very weird. This was in the crash site from Roswell. This is listed in the diaries of James Forrestal, okay? So the other... However, there were two other bodies recovered, and they were listed as during the autopsy as being of a completely foreign nature, not in any sense humanoid whatsoever. When they opened them up, they found that they had, you know, grey-blue blood or whatever, that they had basically vegetable matter. They were partly vegetable, partly you know, animal in form, but largely vegetable. And their whole processing was completely different than any species that any of the doctors who did this autopsy had come across before. And they made this quite clear. So, that's important. It's going to become important now. Why do I think that's important? Well, here's the thing. So if we fast forward again now to the presentation then they later gave to Eisenhower, saying, we infiltrated your whole world, we have manipulated you, and this is what they also said, throughout history, we genetically created you. This is again what they said. We genetically created you and manipulated you. Sound familiar? Yeah, it sounds familiar, doesn't it? Who do we know did that in the first place? Well, we know from numerous historical reports across the planet that goes back to the ancient gods, the gods of Sumeria, the gods of Babylon, the god, you name it, right? As we know. Which are the Sumerian gods? The Anunnaki, that's correct. So how come these grey alien beings, and this is the confusing point here, of course, isn't it, have a connection, are describing what they have done? They're saying, we manipulated humanity. We genetically manipulated you. We manipulated your history. We gave you what we can account for when they say occultist knowledge and spirituality. What's that? That's the knowledge of the mystery schools, isn't it? Which we discussed before. The knowledge of the mystery schools, which was passed down from Enki. Jesus himself was a mystery school initiate. So was John the Baptist. So was Moses. Very well known. This secret knowledge that was held was indeed passed down by the Anunnaki. However, these extraterrestrial beings are saying that they did this, that they manipulated humanity. So how does that tie in? Well, it is my suggestion, a very strongly likely suggestion, I believe, that one of the gophers, as it were, that are described in the early texts, like the Enuma Elish and the Atrahasis, the flood myths of the ancient Sumerians. You can find these anywhere, good bookshop. There is, as you were, you would like to think of it, a kind of lower version of the Anunnaki, if you like, right, in described. And then it's never gone into great detail about them. So first of all, we have the Anunnaki themselves, these huge, you know, very humanoid, tall, big built, spiritually advanced, or to some extent, beings, okay. Then you had the angels, right, they're gophers. Now, they're never fully described in detail. And then you also have another race, or at least another description of the Anunnaki race, called the Igigi, who were the first who did the work in the mines to dig up gold, which humanity eventually replaced, because the Igigi didn't want to do it anymore. So it is my contention that we can see from this that it seems more than likely that this race was a created race of what looked like vegetable kind of almost clones, robotic clones, almost, you know, animalistic, robotic, vegetable clones in a way. This is what the grey species seem like. And that they have been doing this work for the Anunnaki throughout history, but in the historical context, what they have been basically more likely to be is the angels themselves, listed as the angels, all listed as indeed the Igigi, the working class race, I would argue, which were used before humanity. So one or the other, I think it's extremely likely, is what this species actually is. And I would argue that they have been left behind, whilst, as we know, it seemed the vast majority of the Anunnaki gods, the ruling class, left and went back to Nibiru for a period of time before they return again, and we'll talk about that again later, which is, again, they've spoken about returning during the time of Pisces. And it's coming close to the end of the time of Pisces. So, who have they left in charge? I would argue they left these beings to run things with their information and their rules the way they wanted. Okay? So, if that's the case, from here on in, we can see that they've been left in charge of humanity. They told humanity at this meeting with the presidents that that's what the case was, yet again. So it's written in the stone tablets, it's written throughout history in connection with the Anunnaki. This same species have physically come along and told the president and the heads of staff that this was the case, and they have always been running things. And they tell them this with one reason in mind, because in the meeting, what they revealed to, and this is the key point here, what they revealed to these powerful people, including the President of the United States, was that there is a coming time which had been spoken of in many spiritual texts, including, of course, the Bible. And many important things in the Bible, always on three levels. The foundation level of what the words sound like, what's actually being said, which is almost kind of like just a story for the average person in the street. Largely, it has some truth, obviously has some historical truth in it. Then there's the allegory underneath that, like the allegory of the Garden of Eden, which we've spoken about in great detail in the beginning series. And of course, then there is the third underlying one, which is often uses particular types of cipher. So in other words, you'll count every 13th letter, or I'm just using a simple example, and you know, then you'll work out what means from that. But you have to have the key, and you have to know, you know, where that comes from. This is the third level. So that kind of information is encoded in the Bible, and it's encoded in many texts. It's well known. So in the Bible, what we have in Revelation, Right? So Revelation being one of those books that people like to look at because it's about the end times. And well, they might, because it is a very, very strongly, a powerfully allegorical text speaking of an end time to come, which ties in very perfectly, as I've said before, with what Jesus said about, I will be with you to the end of the eon, the end of the age, the end of the age of Pisces, i.e. the beginning of the age of Aquarius, round about now. That's correct. And so, I would argue very much, and so would Zechariah Sitchin, if you read his book, The End of Days, which I would agree with largely. I think you know, I may have a couple of issues in, but that ties in also with, for instance, the Mayan prophecy. And as Zechariah Sitchin pointed out, way before 2012 when he wrote the book, he wrote it something like 2008 or 7 or something, that 2012 was not the date. It was incorrect. It was not what people, they'd misinterpreted it because of the way they'd read the actual clock mechanism, if you like, of the Mayan calendar does not interlock the way that people think it does, and therefore they're doing it on a Gregorian calendar system. So it doesn't come out as 2012. It comes out later than that. And what they're talking about, of course, is a return very probably of this planet that the Anunnaki are from, that we've talked about before, on a big loop around the solar system, which is extremely likely. And as I've said, NASA have shown that there is a planet called Planet X, that they call it. It's on a huge loop. Of course, they haven't spoken about where it is and how near it might be to Earth, because it's always far away, isn't it? Anything dangerous is always far away, as we always discuss. And humanity can't deal with anything that might actually be about to arrive, because in the same way as the dinosaurs who lived on Earth for millions of years wouldn't have believed for a second that, you know, a big asteroid is about to hit until it did. As I say, nothing really happens until it does. So, in this example, as I say, when we look at the returning planet, it's probably in his listings. It could have been anything from between 2030 to 2060 is the return of the planet. However, one of the things that he points out is that the gods always returned way ahead of the return of the planet Nibiru, because they would come and basically, you know, boss humanity around, do things on the planet they created as far as they're concerned. They'd come and look at things, sort things out. Nibiru comes around, returns, and then they kind of almost, you know, jump back on the wheel on the way out, if you like. But basically, yeah, you know, they come around with the planet, which comes around every basically 3,000 years roundabout. So, taking that back, what have we got? We've got these aliens, these extraterrestrial beings, giving this, you know, realization to the president, etc., about these things. The president, etc., and these people, what is he saying? He's saying this end time point is coming. This end time point ties in with the return of Nibiru in some way, and the return of the gods in some way. But there's no specific reference to exactly what is coming. What that is kept across the board, and William Cooper points this out, that it wasn't revealed what it was, but what was revealed was there was some cataclysmic type event that was due to occur, and, you know, before the end of the age of Pisces, as it were, and tied in with the return of the gods, the Anunnaki, and that this particular event is indeed unavoidable. Now, he said, they pointed this out, and to the powers that be, and the politicians said, well, you know, you're very powerful, how can we avoid this destructive level event to the Earth, in some sense, which is what it was listed as, okay? Now, they showed humanity using a technology called looking glass technology. And this is known, you can Google it online. Now, it's since been, looking glass technology was used by elements of the security network in the States, and, you know, high-level military and looked into for years and then discarded. And the reason it was discarded is because they found, and this is a well-known story across from many military sources, that it couldn't be changed. So their suggestion was, what can we do to change this future event? In other words, if somebody else is president, will that change it? If somebody else, what they did is they used, I've mentioned it before in a past episode, used superstring theory. And superstring theory, the idea that you know, one thing happening now is connected to a future point in time where something else happens. So if we alter this bit now, how does it affect the future? Well, you can use superstring theory and quantum mechanics to look at this. And they were able to do this with the help of the extraterrestrials who are, you know, very advanced in this. And they showed them that it's like a bottleneck in time where no matter what is done on this end of things through that sort of superstring effect, the event on the other end is always the same. This was really, really depressing, as I say, for the politicians, for the people in charge at the time in the States who were having this meeting, and but they were very, very frightened, obviously, by this. This gave rise to something called Alternative 1, 2, and 3. And this is very famous. So, this gave rise to this idea during the 80s, for instance, that they thought that this might, this event, whatever it might have been triggered by the state of world pollution, which ties in perfectly to today's climate change that we talk about. They later discovered, however, that it wasn't to do with the Earth's pollution that was going to basically make this happen. Pollution definitely affects the Earth, and you know it's not helping. But this event that was coming, and again, we're not sure, you know, it's not described in detail, but whatever cataclysmic event this was, and I suggested previously it was possibly a coronal mass ejection, a solar flare, but it was not due to pollution on the planet. It was, so the initial ideas they had to do with ozone layer depletion, this was called Alternative One. They were looking at ways to deal with that, and they realized that was a no-go, it didn't work. So they threw that out. And then Alternative Two. Alternative Two was dig deep underground military bases and have a whole city complex underneath the Earth that you can survive in for many years. This has been done before across the Earth. In fact, you can see many examples of this in places like parts of Greece and Turkey. This has been very famously done, and the reason that this happened is still unexplained across the board. And I would suggest it's because this event happened before, something similar, obviously, as we've talked about, right? Just like the Great Flood, okay? So whatever event this was going to happen, they realized they could dig deep underground military bases and you might survive for many years, but again you'd have to come up and rebuild society from zero on top, so it would seem. And they were like, okay, well, so they did that. This is well known because we know, as we discussed last time, deep underground military bases exist across the planet. Whatever you may think, I guarantee it. And super fast hyper railway links across the planet. So they realized this was an option. They built those things, but they realized also it still wasn't the greatest option. So they came up with something called Alternative 3. Now, this is where a very famous program that was made in the 70s, which was done in a mocking, tongue-in-cheek type manner. You can watch it now, go online and Google Science Report, Alternative 3. You will find this. And what you will find is a almost tongue-in-cheek, as I say, 1970s science documentary. And during this documentary, I watched it a number of times in the past, and it never really hit me exactly what was going on. And now, obviously coming across this information many years later, I realized exactly what was being said. In this documentary, they show that there's a brain drain. What they mean is that there were a number of people who were in very high positions that suddenly went missing. And this is in the 70s, mind you. Went missing. And that this was actually based on reality. That was definitely provably the case. A lot of high-level people who were not famous, let's say, but very, very high level in military and tech backgrounds had gone missing. over a period of time. It's like, well, that's interesting. And the program takes you around interviewing these people and basically picks up the breadcrumbs as it goes along. And, you know, to cut the long story short, basically it finds this trail of breadcrumbs leads to NASA astronauts, amongst other things, and shows that a number of people have gone missing. A number of strange things have happened with astronauts who didn't want it to speak about it initially, but then off, you know, off camera, as it were, or to the right people, had said certain things at certain times. And in this, as I say, mockumentary, they interview people about disappearing people. They interview people about this idea of what is alternative three. And one of the guys says, well, alternative three is, you can't do anything about this planet, so you get the hell off it. In other words, you look for another planet. In other words, just like you're thinking about SpaceX going to Mars, or, but I would suggest SpaceX is a secondary thing, that's another point. But basically a long time ago, or in the 70s, already having a lot of stuff off-world and different ideas to take you to other moons, like Titan, for instance, knowing that's a very potentially habitable world as a moon of Saturn. And these were one of possible things. Now, as the tech for advanced extraterrestrial travel occurred, of course, they may well have been, and I would suggest very strongly, being looking to get much further away than our solar system. And perhaps this is where that ties in with the connections with the Nazi regime and any connections they would have with that breakaway civilization from Antarctica, which we spoke about, because the scientists from Operation Paperclip, who run the state's networks, let's make no mistake, will have had some connection with those people, because they were all in the Thule Society together, occult societies together, pulling all of their resources together. And I would argue probably that were fully aware that one of those groups went off world and sought life elsewhere with help from other extraterrestrial races. Whether it be the same race, it seems likely. Well, I don't know, but it seems likely. So, in the documentary, they realize that this is the other alternative to get off the planet. So they interview, they managed to get an interview with an astronaut who was, you know, in the film is, I was one of the astronauts who went to the moon. And he's saying that he's one of the first astronauts on the moon, so Apollo 11. Now, in the film, and this is what's interesting, his name is Bob Grodin. And this is one of the big giveaways of how you can probably almost certainly say it's extremely likely there is some truth in this. And the reason I say that is because the man, a man's name, Bob Grodin, has no connection whatsoever with any astronauts, a made-up name for that, you would think. Except that the name Bob Grodin happens to be one of the biggest CIA operative connectors to the JFK assassination and the cover-up therein. And William Cooper was very, very privy to that, fully aware of that man as a person and who he really was. And so what they're doing is, again, hiding in plain sight, a nod, nod, nudge, nudge, wink, wink situation, saying, this is real. We're doing this in a... Because if they put it out, you have to understand, imagine if they put that out in a realistic way, a real way where you would buy it. 100% you think, oh, well, you know, nobody would go, oh, you know, it's all done in a jokey way. As soon as you go, oh, yeah, it's all done in a jokey way, and at the end, or I remember, you know, at the end it said, made in April the 1st. It just said that as well, so that you can always say, oh, it's an April Fool's joke as well. Because then you've got a, you know, you get a get-out clause, and you're like, oh, I'm safe. Whereas, of course, if you'd just hidden it, you'd just put it out there as if it was a real thing, people would have been killed, especially in the 70s, because this was not that old then. So, in the documentary, they interviewed this astronaut, Bob Grodin, as I say, and he says he pretends to be like, you know, a drunk recluse now who just can't take it anymore after the shit he's seen. He can't deal with it. And this is the deal, right? And he says, and the guy says, well, so what happened up there? And he says, well, we weren't the first. And he says, what? What? He says, we weren't the first. They were already there when we got there. Now, there is, and what he is alluding to is, in the documentary particularly, is not alluding to extraterrestrials. He is alluding to, as earlier in the documentary is also mentioned, I'll get to this now, he's alluding to that what was already up there were their own people, their own American moon base, in conjunction with the Russians. That the Russians and the Americans already had a moon base, which William Cooper maintained that was called Luna, and had run since the late 50s. And they'd had a moon base running there for some time, working on off-world colonies ahead of time, right there and then. And working on using it as a jump site into deeper space for, you know, alternative three, to save humanity from what was coming and to set it all up financially, right? And what, of course, he doesn't mention there, of course, but also is Cooper talks about how this, of course, was done with help from and in conjunction with the extraterrestrials, who the Americans were doing deals with, and of course the Russians were doing deals with. So that together they create a moon site, a moon base, and later on a Mars base, which by now theoretically should have been running for a good 30 years. And so the idea being that these two sites enable a level of, let's say, scientists and people who would be involved in a breakaway civilization of survivors from a potential cataclysmic event on Earth, would be readying those sites for probably further exploration into deeper space, and already having those off-world colonies ready to go on Mars and the Moon. But this, you see, of course this sounds far-fetched because it's something we just haven't heard of. But here's the thing for you. And so first of all, the smoking gun there is Bob Grodin, as I say, the name. So you say, well, okay, you've taken the name Bob Grodin. And as I say, he's one of the main conspirators in the JFK assassination. You can find his name, you know, under CIA listings. So there's him. And the biggest smoking gun of all was, of course, another giveaway. And it's mentioned in the documentary, for instance, this guy's interviewed, and he says, oh, you know, one of the things we were always very suspicious about was the Cold War years. He said, well, the whole of the Cold War, you know, ran for however long, 10 years or more. There was never any confrontation. He said, in all of history, there's never been an example of theoretically warlike goings on between nations, where there's been no confrontation at all, really, between those powers on any real level. Yeah, minor ones here and there, you know. Skirmishes done by other people in Afghanistan who are fighting for you, for instance, for the Russians, for the Americans. But the reality is the Americans themselves and the Russians themselves are never actually fighting each other. He said, that's really strange. We always found it very, very, very odd. And I would argue that's the biggest giveaway of all. Now, if we look at that as we fast forward that in time and we think to this day, the Russians are the biggest, you know, example to this day in the States. They're always demonized, right? Oh, those commies. America's obsessed with it, right? And yet, what a better cover story could there continuously be when you've never actually had any real combat against them? I mean, as I say, through a Afghan rebels and so on and so forth, perhaps, but they're brief and minor. There's never really been any major confrontation. You know, there's this idea of the Bay of Pigs, nothing happened. It's the same thing. So when we put that into context and we think during this whole huge period of potential confrontation between these two superpowers, nothing has ever really happened. Now, if we tie into that, and here's the biggie, this is the biggest giveaway. It's very simply this. So, whether we're looking at the war, any war, what do we know about wars? Wars make money. And why do they make money? Because the nation, the politicians go to the bankers and they say to the bankers, oh, we need more money for the war, so we need you to print more fake money. We'll talk about fake money at a later date, but anyway, print up more money, which makes more, you know, available income available to me instantly as a nation, as a political leader. So suddenly all this new money is available for my military spending, for the Pentagon and for the White House, as it were. So all this money now that's suddenly apparently there is to be used for ostensibly wars, right? So that could be the Cold Wars, right? Where you've got, you know, spying going on and a huge amount of money disappearing. And you go, well, that's interesting. And then you had, of course, the Vietnam War, huge amounts of money disappearing. Then, of course, you had Afghanistan. Well, you know, again, huge amounts of money disappearing. Didn't make much sense. And of course, you've got the Ukraine today. And the day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld very famously gave a speech where he explained to the American people that a number of $1 trillion were missing. A number of $1 trillion were missing, and they had been spent in the US defense budget. So ask yourself this question. Missing trillions of dollars. Suddenly the jolly old Ukraine turns up, but the Americans and the Russians are still not fighting each other. The Americans won't take part. Funny that, isn't it? And yet they'll give millions, apparently trillions, to the Ukraine. Interesting. Interesting. To theoretically fight against the Russians. Now, it is my contention, it is very clear the case, that all this money, which disappears into black ops projects, as is always described, as was described by Rumsfeld, he's trying to embarrassingly come up with a reason, which he couldn't, to suggest where, the day before 9/11, look it up, please do, it's there online, you can see him giving the speech. Where's all this money going? You see, because of course 9/11 hit and then everybody forgets about the missing trillions. Oh, 9/11, yeah, yeah, doesn't matter. And then George W. Bush says, let's go to war with Iraq. It's like, yeah, let's do that, yeah, so we can spend more millions. But what you're really doing is taking at least 3/4 of that money and spending it on off-world colonies. Black ops to set up off-world colonies to get you the hell off planet Earth when what's really coming arrives. Now, that is the greatest cover-up in modern history. I guarantee it. Exactly what that will be, I cannot say. Is it the return of the planet Nibiru? It could be. It's due, but as I say, it could be due within another, you know, 40 years. So that's difficult to say. But it seems also extremely likely, as I've said before in the previous episodes, that that end time set of information could be this, as we discussed in our last series, a coronal mass ejection and solar flare. And if it is that, I would argue that yes, there could be widespread destruction and death on the Earth, and they will be leaving on their rockets to leave with all the money that they've saved, with the colonies they've already got set up. But next time you hear about any war anywhere, especially when nothing really happens, or they're giving millions to somebody and they don't seem to need that much money, and all the film you see of Ukraine, but nothing's really happening there. That's interesting. Is there a war? Well, there's some, you know, random bits and bobs happening. People are dying, sure, but it's not an all-out war by anything. So where's the millions going? Where's the trillions going? Where do you think? Where do you think? Well, what costs trillions is setting up space exploration of numerous levels. So I would argue that is exactly what has been happening for the last 60 years at least. I hope you've enjoyed this. I hope it's been informative and useful to you. Until next time, I wish you truth, freedom, and balance.